The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today we'll be talking with one of my writing heroes, best-selling author Michael Connelly. But before we get started with Michael, this from Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Welcome to the Mike Lupica Podcast. And anybody who reads my column or listens to this podcast knows that I'm a ridiculous fanboy for Michael Connelly, who has created not just one of the most memorable characters in the history of crime fiction in Harry Bosch, but then spun that off into Mickey Haller. And now this year also came out with a great book, The Late Show on a Cop Named Rene Ballard. His new book, Two Kinds of Truth, about Harry Bosch, is actually out today. And how he found a half hour to do this, I don't know. I'm glad that he did. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Michael, you know, I get accused of writing a lot, but I don't know how that The Late Show and a new Bosch come out within months of each other. We'll get to The Late Show in a minute. Tell me about the new Bosch, because I am usually first in line the day a new Connelly comes out, but I haven't had a chance today because I'm talking to you.
Well, yeah, Bosch is back. It's significant to me because it's the 20th book that features him as the main protagonist. He's been in a few other books besides that, but this is the main one, and he's the main one. So 20 of these in 25 years is pretty significant to me. As far as the story goes, at this point I gotta always be looking to put Bosch in a new light, if you will, or just try to put him through something we haven't seen him before. And without going or giving away a lot of the plot, what happens in this case is he's following a case and he has to go undercover as a kind of old. He is an old guy. He's in his mid-60s, and he using his age to go undercover in the illicit opioid drug cabal, if you will. So it kind of reflects stuff that's going on in the world we know right now, and it's a new look at Bosch, because he's we've never seen him in this as an undercover guy.
We're talking to Michael Connelly on the Mike Lupica Podcast, and he's had, Bosch has, such a fascinating career as a cop across these 20 books, from robbery homicide to Hollywood Division to Open Unsolved to Homicide Special, and lately he's it's like he's working out of the back of a garage for the San Bernardino Police Department. And one thing you have done, and it's interesting because I just love this kind of writing. I've done a little of it myself. Bob Parker was a great friend of mine. Spencer never aged, but you have not been afraid to have Harry Bosch age across these books.
Well, it was a decision I made over 25 years ago, and who would have, how could I have thought that he'd be still around? It's been an amazing good fortune for me that Harry's still active in my imagination and in readers' imaginations. And I made that decision to age him because I thought, show him evolving against a city that's evolving. And then, we're journalists, you and me, and you get into what's at the heart of journalism, a little bit of social reflection. And that's what I decided to do. I thought it would be best to do it that way if he wasn't frozen in time, either in age or even in, a place.
Michael, just said we're both journalists, and he comes out of the newspaper business. I'm still punching away at it. It is a great leap to sit down and finally write the first novel. And I believe the first Bosch, I'm testing my own memory, was the Black Echo. But it's a great leap. But, you know, I was reading back on you today, and it's not like you sat down to write a novel and then were, you know, to use the old Hollywood cliche, where you were discovered on a drugstore seat at Schwab's. It was a grind.
Yeah, I'm not an overnight sensation success. You know, so yeah, I worked at it and had really good people surrounding me, and you know, with advice and so forth, and really kind of was, I think, pointed in the right direction. I mean, you know, I'll be the first to admit I have an ego, so therefore I'll tell you I have some talent, but I know enough about the world of publishing and so forth to know that that's only one part of the recipe, and you do need some luck, and you need some good people around you, and I've had both of those. But yeah, I mean, I had a course that was kind of plotted by agents and editors and publishers. I'm still, you know, 25 years later, 31 books later, with the same publisher, and so it's been a plan, and it grew slowly, but it did grow. So that was the good thing about it.
We're talking to Michael Connelly on the Mike Lupica podcast. And so explain to me your schedule, say, over the last year and a half. Were you writing The Late Show and Two Kinds of Truth at the same time, or did you finish one and then go right into the other?
The latter. I can't do a lot of stuff, especially books. I can't do two books at once. I can work on a book and also work on a TV show. But my books, I just write in linear fashion and go from one to the other. But sometimes I write a book fast because I've been carrying it around. I've been, to use a newspaper phrase, I've been gathering strength. So on The Late Show, which was very much inspired by a woman I know, a detective I know, who was on The Late Show, the midnight shift at Hollywood Station in the LAPD. And so I've known her for years, and I've been hearing stories and anecdotal stories and so forth from her for years. And I knew I was going to write this book. I wasn't sure when, and it just something, you know, it's hard to put a finger on it. But I got the inspiration, so I wrote it. And I wrote it, you know, the physical writing of it on a laptop very quickly. So on one hand, you can say, oh, he wrote that in 5 months. But on the other hand, I've been gathering information on it and thinking about it for 5 years. And so this was an unusual year because I ended up with two books published, but I didn't write two books in the year, is the way I look at it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because right now I'm writing, and in the mornings I'm working on an adult mystery, and the afternoons I'm working on my new children's book, and about to lose my mind. So I'm glad that you scheduled yourself a lot better than I. I have to talk about Bosch, the TV series, because it's part of the broader conversation, again, about one of the great characters ever in crime fiction. And Michael, you must have had some starts and stops, either getting this to be a TV series or a movie, before you and this creative team and Titus Welliver came together in this amazing synchronicity to come up with the TV series Bosch.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost the same answer as before. I'm not an overnight success. I've gone down the road with Bosch in Hollywood for decades, and had a lot of false starts. And you know, when I made money in Hollywood, I would say Hollywood initially buying the rights to Bosch is what was my ticket out of journalism. And so I don't have regrets about anything, but it took a while. And Bosch was on a shelf for a long time at a studio where they had tried to make a movie and it never happened. And so I got control of the character, you know, kind of legal control of the character back at just at the right time, because the whole streaming world was really taking off. Serialized storytelling and television was where it was at. And so I got these books back after they were on a shelf for like, and just gathering dust for like a decade. right away, obviously some places were interested. Amazon was starting up. Amazon could, you know, probably punch two keys on a computer somewhere and know how many of my books they had sold. So they came to me and said, we want to do this. And it was very streamlined after many, many years of not being so streamlined.
We're talking to Michael Connelly, whose new book is out now, Two Kinds of Truth. It's the new Harry Bosch novel, and if you've read Bosch, then you will be running to get it. If you have not, and you love this kind of book, then you have missed out, and you can go back to the beginning, and I'm jealous. Michael, what's interesting to me about the TV series, having read all the books, is the way you continue, and the creative team, to conflate, like, two books at once into one season of the show. I'm putting that badly, but it's brilliant the way you've woven two stories, two Connelly stories, into one 10-episode arc.
Yeah, I mean, that comes out of, you know, the positive side of the long journey. All the while the character was on the shelf, I kept writing books about Harry Bosch because I didn't really care whether they were feeding Hollywood or not. It was more right. Like I loved the character and I wanted to explore it further. So that when I did get the character back, at that time I had like 15 or 16 Bosch books. So there's a lot of material. And so when we decided to make a TV show, everything was available. You know, we have a writing room on the show, and I always start each year by saying, hey, anything's available. If you see even just like a anecdote in one book, but we're doing another right. book, and you can figure out how to put it in. Go ahead. Everything's available in the whole Bosch catalog. And so that's really kind of been kind of a blessing for us, so that we, you know, can combine stories. We can take from there and there and so forth, and make what I think has been some pretty good seasons.
Oh,
seasons
man.
That get better each year.
Oh man, and you know, if for anybody who has not seen Bosch, the TV series on Amazon, I encourage you to do that, because one thing that will happen, Michael, everybody's seen Titus Welliver in something, okay?
Right.
And
yep.
This to me is such a breakout thing, because what we have found out over the first two seasons, and I guess you're filming now, is that, oh man, does he have the chops to carry a show?
Yeah, I mean, he's great. And, you know, as you say, everyone's seen him. He's been a character actor for 3 decades. He's been in lots of stuff. And this is the first time he's ever had a lead. So that guy absolutely cherishes this chance he's had and the possibilities of this. And so he is all in. And it's just such a great thing to even be able to be on the set with him. I'm actually calling you from the studio, and I just walked off the set where we just had a scene with him that was just really well done on his part. And, you know, that's the kind of thing I get to see all the time, because this guy, you know, waited 30 years for this chance, and he's making the best of it.
We're talking to Michael Connelly on the Mike Lupica podcast. His new Harry Bosch novel, Two Kinds of Truth, is out now. I heartily encourage you to go see. You know, when I started out writing novels, I wrote some mystery novels, and one of them I wrote is a television movie that was filmed entirely in New York. And I know how much fun it was, Michael, just for that one experience to go every day and see all these, you know, places and scenes that you had imagined sitting in those days. I was writing on a manual typewriter. It must be a hoot for you to be so involved with this process, and again see all of this setting that you have used in the Bosch books come to life the way it has.
Yeah, it's really it's hard to describe. It is very fulfilling, it has been a long time coming, so that makes it even sweeter. But it's also the reaction and the reception we have as we, you know, when I write about Los Angeles and I include like a real restaurant or something, I don't ask permission or anything. I just put it in the book. Now we have to go into these places and ask permission. Can we film here? And they, you know, unanimously, they're going like, of course, Harry Bosch, we want him in here, because they're aware of being represented in the books and so forth. So it's Bosch has been a great ambassador for this show as we go in and try to use the real places. And it is just, you know, half of it's a, you know, an ego ride, I admit that, but it is pretty cool. And you must also remember this: you sit in a room and create something out of nothing. You know, you in front of your in front of my laptop, and you in front of your Selectric or whatever you wrote on back then.
Right.
And then it becomes this little city of 150 or 250 people all working and earning wages and being creative, all because of this idea you had. And that is an amazing thing to experience, and it's very fulfilling. And, you know, I kind of feel like I'm the mayor, or at least the deputy mayor of this little town here. We've used 90% of our crew has been on it all 40 seasons. And so it's like people I know very well, and we're all having a good time doing this. And it's just amazing to think that when I wrote that first Harry Bosch book, that you're correct, The Black Echo, you know, I wrote it in a walk-in closet I turned into like an office, and that would 25 years later become this is really hard to describe what that means to me.
My late friend Frank DeFord, a couple of his novels became movies, and he said the first time he was ever on the set, he looked around and he thought to himself, he had one moment where he thought to himself, they're all here because of me.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting in a room by myself, and now this has come out of that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Michael, there's so much texture and context and so many reasons why I love the Bosch books. I love your love of jazz and his love of jazz. And this has nothing to do with anything, but I just love the way that you clearly love my friend Vin Scully and have written him up, I think, in more than one book.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's, you know, such an indispensable part of Los Angeles, you know, retired or not, he's so important. I went to the first World Series game, and they showed him in the booth, and it got a louder applause than when Turner hit a two-run home run. It was just amazing. And he's been very helpful and special to me. You know, when we – and this goes back to the show, Bosch. I really wanted the show to start with the voice of Los Angeles. Vin Scully, and we had issues with MLB allowing us to take one of his broadcasts. So I had interviewed him many years before when I was a journalist, and I, like most journalists, I kept his phone number. So I just kind of called him up out of the blue and asked him if I wrote a one-page script of him on the radio during a rain delay at Dodger Stadium, could I come and record that? And then we would play that over black and then open the Bosch show. This is the first episode. I wanted it to start with Vin Scully's voice. And he said, of course I will, but one thing, I'm going to write that one page, not you.
Did he really?
Yeah, so he had some kind of old-timers dinner. This was off-season, but it was at Dodger Stadium. And I went over there and I recorded his script on a just an iPhone, and then that's how the show begins. You hear Vin Scully talking about how few rain delays there have been in Dodger Stadium history and so forth, and it's a signature thing of all the detail that he always brings or brought to his broadcast, and it was very special to open the Bosch show with his voice.
And we were talking to Michael Connelly on the Mike Lubega podcast, and he is a novelist, or was a novelist when he was still doing the games. I've been working with my friend Bob Costas on his autobiography, Michael, and there's a page where we just have Scully's call of Koufax's perfect game. And you know this because you've listened to him probably way more than I have. It's the detail and everything he brought to that moment, Michael, were completely novelistic. He has that eye. He has that use of the language. And so I completely understand how he'd say, no, I got this, Michael. I'll write this down.
Yeah.
Don't worry about me.
It's perfect.
We're talking with the great Michael Connelly. More with Michael in a minute. But first, a word from Audible. Audible makes getting more books in your life easy. What's not to love about that? They have an absolutely unbeatable selection of audiobooks, all that with fantastic performances. You can easily transform your long commute or your ride with Audible, as I do. And I'm telling you, whether I'm in a train or a car, I do this all the time. Right now, you can start a 30-day trial and your first audiobook is free. You have to go to audible.com/Lupica. Audible has an outstanding collection of exclusive originals, short stories, comedy, all of that. Plus the best of news podcasts like this one and more. Handpicked and continuously refreshed. Be sure to check out audible.com/Lupica to start your 30-day trial and get your first audiobook free. I'm calling them today. I want at least one free. You mentioned that you deal with the opioid crisis in Two Kinds of Truth, and at the heart of the Renee Ballard novel is sexual harassment. So in the same year, it seems like you've had your hand pretty much on the hand of the culture with what's going on in the world right now.
I know it's kind of weird, but also I got to admit something. In Two Kinds of Rain, I also predicted a Dodgers World Series victory, and so I don't know.
Well, now we're
I can't be right all the time, so we'll see.
Well, we're having this conversation with Mr. Connolly on the afternoon before Game 6 of the World Series. Michael, I was in Houston over the weekend. I had to come back to New York after that. So I was there for Game 5, which is the greatest goddamn game of baseball I've ever seen in my life. So if the Dodgers are going to make a profit out of you, they've got their work cut out for you against Verlander.
They really do.
I want to talk about a couple of characters. I know that you're pressed for time today. Mickey, you had spun off, you had started, you'd written novels about other characters before, Terry McCaleb, but then Mickey Haller became such a great character for you. Tell me a little bit, I'm sure you've been asked this before, a little bit about the thought process of having the Lincoln lawyer and Harry Bosch become half-brothers.
I always have this thing where I like the link cases. I mean, I kind of view all my books as one big story. And, you know, and I've had that sense since the beginning. And I, you know, other authors have done it, and that's probably where I got it. I can't think of offhand, you know, which ones do that, but I know.
Well, Elmore Leonard, my pal Elmore Leonard, Michael, he had characters whose lineage he would trace back to his westerns. There was a character called Bo Catlett that kind of put the Catlett family. He loved doing that, and sometimes I just thought he did it for his own amusement, but he always made it work.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that was it because I was a big fan of him as well. But anyway, it's something you do for yourself as a writer, and you hope that the reader digs it. But you never know. But what's important to me is the 10 or 11 months it takes me usually to write a book. I want to be plugged in, and I like doing those kind of connections. And so, you know, initially I got the idea for the Lincoln lawyer. Oddly enough, we were talking about Dodgers at a Dodger game. I was sitting next to a guy on an opening day in 2000, and he was wearing a shirt and tie, so I knew he's like a business guy or something, playing hooky for the afternoon game on a Tuesday. And we got to talking, and that's when he told me he was a lawyer. And then when I said, "Where's your office?" he said, "It's the back seat of my car." And as the game was going on, I was getting what I knew could be an interesting story and an interesting character. So it started like that. And then it was another case where I carried that around for in my back pocket, so to speak, for a long time, and did some research with other lawyers and so forth. Then I wrote the book. And it wasn't until the second draft where I came up with the idea that I could link him. I mean, I was always looking for a link to my Bosch series, but that's a big link to make them half brothers. And I, you know, I worked it out. I went back in, I don't know if you want this long answer, but anyway, I went back to a book I wrote, my second book called The Black Ice. And in that, there's like a little 3-page section where Bosch reminisced about meeting his father one time because he grew up not knowing who his father was.
Right.
And in that memory, he goes and sees his father, who is a pretty famous defense lawyer in town, and he sees he has a little kid. There's a little kid at the house as well, and that little kid, I realized, could grow up to be Mickey Haller Jr., Harry's half-brother. So that all kind of came together when I was going through my old books looking for how I could connect them.
We're talking to Michael Connolly, who's... as always, much anticipated, Harry Bosch novel is out now called Two Kinds of Truth. I want to circle back to Renee Ballard because I ripped through that this summer. And obviously, I'm going to make the assumption that since it debuted at number one, it will not be the last Renee Ballard novel. And I know you've written other novels with a woman as a main character, but it just seemed like this character was rip-roaring fun for you.
Yeah, I mean, so much so that, you know, I immediately knew this one is going to stick around for a while. I'm right now writing a book for next year where she crosses paths paths with Bosch. So, you know, it's going back to your last question. Yeah. I'm always looking to connect these. It, you know, next year's book will definitely be a Ballard book, but Bosch is going to play a important role in it. So, yeah, I mean, basically I write a book, and then I always come, you know, it's like you ask yourself, is there anything more to say about this character? Are you interested in this character? Can you go the distance again? Meaning, can you spend a year every day exploring this character? And, you know, with her, the answer was a resounding yes. Sometimes it hasn't been yes, and, you know, sometimes after a couple of books, I feel I've said all I have to say about a character, but something instinctively, I kind of feel like she's like Bosch. She could be around for a long time.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm talking to Michael Connelly on the Mike Lubega podcast. It is always fascinating as you go across, again, the arc of Harry Bosch's career as a cop, that it seems like with a lone wolf character like him, even though he has partners and bosses and a daughter and for a while had an ex-wife, is it a complicated thing to decide, are you going to let him fall in love? And how long is the character? How long is that character going to last? Because sometimes in this book, when somebody like Bosch falls for a woman, you think, oh, crap, she's a goner.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the conceits of writing these kind of stories, and one of the handicaps as well, that, you know, I always want Bosch to be thirsty and hungry for something, missing something in his life, searching for something in his life. So you got to be careful not to make him satisfied and not to be happy and not to have, like, you know, domestic bliss, because I think that would change the character. And, you know, so that's fine. And you have those conclusions, but you don't realize that, you know, when I kept having him have romances and so forth fall apart or disappointments, again, I never knew this thing would last 25 years. I never knew there would be 20 books. So so when you take it in a whole, as a whole, man, he's had a torturous life. You know, he can't ever seem to grab the brass ring. And, you know, so I think it begs, you know, reality somewhat, and that's, you know, the one flaw. I'm sure there's lots of flaws, but that's one of the big flaws in writing series fiction, if you're lucky enough to keep the series going.
We're talking to Michael Connelly, who, again, has created in Harry Bosch, and this is not being dismissive of his other characters, one of the enduring great characters. I mean, you can go Philip Marlowe or Spencer or anybody. This is one of the great characters in the history of this genre. And, Michael, if you could boil down his code to one line, it has to be, everybody matters or nobody matters. Is that something, is that a Connelly line, or is that something somebody said to you at some point in your life?
It's weird. I don't remember. I can't identify it as any cop.
But it's the best, Michael. If you said, okay, describe this character, that's his whole, I mean, it,
yeah,
I don't mean
counts.
You
huh? You know, it's everybody counts. It's just a basic fairness. That's what he is. I think in any situation he wants to be a fair person, and, you know, that's we wish everybody was like that in the world. And so that's why I think it connects to people. I'll tell you something interesting, though, that, you know, I'm pretty sure I just made it up. I can't remember exactly how it came to be. It wasn't in the first book. It was actually first mentioned in the third book. And, but now it's like life imitating art, I guess you say. There's a war room, they call it, at the LAPD, where, like, if they have a big case and they're going to task force it, they go into this room that has big screens and whiteboards and set up in there, and on the wall it's painted, everybody counts or nobody counts.
I said matters. Yeah, I apologize. Yeah, it's everybody counts or nobody counts. Yeah,
it's the same thing. But but they obviously took that from Harry Bosch. In fact, it says - Harry Bosch underneath it. And so the origin is not completely known or remembered by me, but now it's become part of the LAPD vernacular thanks to Harry Bosch.
And you guys are shooting, or have you finished, or are you shooting season 3 of Bosch now?
Season 4.
Yeah,
season 4, we're on the 9th episode of 10, so we're almost finished. And then that will be out next year, early next year sometime.
And it's all done in L.A. This will sound like inside baseball, but I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to do this with you again. The decision to make Irving to have him be played by Lance Reddick is so brilliant in this show, and I want to know whose idea that was.
The writer, showrunner, is the boss of a TV show named Eric Overmyer, worked with Lance on The Wire. And so he was the guy my producing partner and I went to and said, do you want to run this show? I knew him previously. I knew he had read the books and was familiar with Bosch. So, yes, he signed on. And then we completely mined his connections to The Wire. So we got Lance, we got Jamie Hector, and we've gotten several other people. And basically his overriding thing was, you know, the best actor for the part. And, you know, Lance Reddick on The Wire played a commanding officer, and we wanted to make this one a little bit different so he wasn't doing the same character, and I think we've done that. And this season that we're filming now, it's based on Angel's Flight. So, and it's, you know, it's updated. That book's 20 years old, but it dealt with the riots and racial tensions in the 90s. And here we are, 2017, and we still have racial tensions and issues and Black Lives Matter and so forth. So it was a perfect book, I think, to set in 2017. And Lance is now the police chief in the show, and he's a key part of this season, and how he's handling it and so forth. It's just been fantastic. When I said I just came off the set where we were filming a scene with Bosch, well, it was Bosch and Chief Irving, and it's just, you know, it was just a great scene. And I was sitting there, not knowing you'd ask that question, I was sitting there thinking, I'm so happy that we got Lance way back when.
Oh, those scenes always give off sparks. We're talking to Michael Connelly, Two Kinds of Truth. His new Harry Bosch novel is out now. Are you, do you spend more of your time in L.A. now or Florida?
I put it this way, I'm now a taxpayer in California, which I wish I wasn't, but I'm out here quite a bit because of the show. So I'm a resident of California, although I keep my Florida roots for sure.
How many books ahead do you think? Renee Ballard, it will cross paths with Bosch.
That's it. All I got. I mean, I don't think too far ahead. I mean, because, you know, what happens in our world, you know, dictates a lot of stuff. So it doesn't really, I don't really want to think about what I'm going to be writing in 3 years. I just hope and know if I'm alive, I'll be writing. But I don't know what I'll be doing then. It will come out of... you know, when I'm, you know, the book previously or whatever, but I don't think too far ahead. The good thing is that over time, yeah, I've gotten confidence to know that I'm not going to be freaked out like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I know the ideas will come, and I know I have a cast of characters I can call on and draw from, and I'll be fine. So I don't need to be too worried about planning books in the future.
William Goldman is one of my best friends, Michael, and one of my writing heroes, and a marathon man. I was saying to somebody the other day, it's like a perfect thriller. It's like so brilliant, you don't even know where to start. But he always talked about details in books like that, and he referred to detail as being as authentic as dust on a library book. And the procedural stuff in the Bosch books is just brilliant. And it's a long way around for me to ask you, cops must love these books and love this series.
I mean, I think so. I mean, we have a lot of cops involved. We have two active homicide investigators, including the woman who inspired Renee Ballard in The Late Show. And they're very much a part of the show. I mean, they've been helping me with my books for years, and so I brought them into the show. And you know, the show, long before we're filming, the writers get together, six writers in a writing room. It's like a long, it's like a boardroom-type table. We all sit around this table and, you know, hammer out the seasons. And we have these homicide cops come in every Thursday and join us. And, you know, we get that kind of dust on the library books from them. They just throw out anecdotal stories. They don't know the gold that they're giving us, actually, because it's routine to them. It's stuff they've done 100 times, but we haven't seen on TV or we haven't heard about. And so that is the process for me with my books, and the same with the TV show. And, you know, and then it extends to the casting and so forth. Many of the people in the show are real cops. You know, they don't have the key roles, but they're in background or they have small parts. You know, I don't know if it's true, but I believe that if, you know, you see a cop walking through a police station, there's an authenticity to that that you might miss if it's just an extra, you know, that you get from general casting.
How you never won an Emmy, Michael, for your performances on Castle, I'll never know.
It's an outrage.
It's an outrage. And by the way, you worked with a guy who later in his life became a novelist and loved it to death, Steve Cannell. And a few times I intersected with him on book tours. Michael, he loved being a crime novelist at the end of his life. I mean, the day I found out he was had passed away, I couldn't believe it because I'd seen him a few months before. And man, he loved being in this world.
Yeah, I mean, he was, first of all, what a nice guy.
And oh, boy.
I was on Castle because of him, because when he shifted towards writing books, he integrated into the cadre of L.A.-based writers, and so we would have lunch and so forth, and it was pretty amazing, this guy who, you know, had conquered, more than conquered television. He was like the king of television for many years. You know, coming to me and saying, like, how do you deal with this publisher and that kind of thing, and asking advice of little old me. But it was pretty amazing and a super nice guy. And so then some of the people he had mentored in the TV business created and ran Castle. And so they came back to him with the idea of the poker game that would come in and out of the series every now and then, and he got to pick the players he wanted to play with, so I was lucky that he invited me.
Michael, who were your heroes? I mean, I've said that Elmore Leonard, who I was lucky enough to be, spoke to him 4 or 5 times a week, and Bill Goldman, and I know Dutch loved your work tremendously, especially the dialogue. Who were the guys that made you want to do this?
Well, I mean, those are great guys that you're talking about, and they certainly influenced me. I remember, you know, I had a job out of college at a newspaper in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and they were making a Leonard movie based on this book, Stick. And it was the only time I ever kind of misused my press pass, and I acted like I was on a story because I wanted to try to meet him. Little did I know that writers were rarely allowed on the sets of movies and so forth, so it was kind of a mistake. I didn't get a chance to meet him. I met him many years later in Los Angeles. But, yeah, he's definitely a guy who influenced me because he was also – I grew up in South Florida, and he went into his South Florida period right at the time I was trying to figure out how to be a writer. John D. McDonald wrote about Fort Lauderdale, where I grew up, and he was influential. I think the big three for me are all wrote some, coincidentally, because I had never never stepped foot into Los Angeles until I was 30 years old, but Ross McDonald, Raymond Chandler, and Joseph Wambaugh all wrote about L.A. and Southern California, and I think they were the most influential writers on me.
No one has ever written this kind of book better. Michael Connelly, his work is known around the world now. His new book is Two Kinds of Truth. It is the new Harry Bosch novel. For those of us who are Bosch junkies, it is always like a book holiday when a new book comes out. Michael, thank you so much for doing this today. Again, I tried to keep my enthusiasm down today, but I was unable to do it. It's so fun reading these books. And Michael, I don't binge watch anything except Bosch. And every single year I tell myself, okay, we're going to slow down this year. We're going to space these out. And over a weekend, I've watched them all.
Wow. That's great. Great to hear. But I also really appreciate you, your interest in having me on the show.
Book tours are never fun, but I tend to think that this one will be a lot of fun because you're riding a pretty big wave this year after Late Show, and I will be shocked if Two Kinds of Truth doesn't do as well. Again, thank you, sir, for doing this today, and good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Michael Conley, Harry Bosch, Mickey Haller, Renee Ballard, others over a quarter century has put together a resume for this kind of book that will last forever. I'm so happy we're able to have him on today. You know, if you listen to this podcast, I only talk to people I want to talk to. This is the kind of conversation we have every week. So please subscribe. Please continue to download this thing. Our numbers are like, they're stupid. I don't really understand them. Go leave comments about, you don't have to say anything bad about me. You'll just like what Michael said today. And I'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.